ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवामहे तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Upanishad has several meanings. One meaning which we adopted last time was or is sitting near. Who sits near whom? Because all sitting near need not constitute Upanishad. In which case, all airline passengers would be enlightened. They are all sitting near each other. Who sits near whom? And in what conditions? The usual and very valid answer to that question is that a qualified seeker sits near an enlightened teacher, master, guru, in an atmosphere of peace, in an atmosphere of holiness. And if this happens, communication of the spiritual truths is facilitated, is almost effortless. All three are equally important. The environment is important, the master is important, and the seeker is important. There must be holiness in the environment, there must be enlightenment in the master, and there must be qualification in the student, in the seeker. But from whose point of view or to whom is Upanishad so vitally important? Not to the environment, and not even to the master. It is to the seeker that the Upanishad or transmission of the spiritual truth or communication of the spiritual truth is most important. And therefore, we start with that. As a matter of fact, we will deal only with that. We shall not concern ourselves with the qualities and qualifications of a master. And we shall not waste our time describing what a tremendous holy atmosphere the ancient hermitages were, or the caves or the forests were, and so on. They're all far cry now. But as we shall see presently, if the seeker is a true seeker, the other things somehow adjust themselves If the seeker is a seeker, a true seeker, in the sense he is nothing but a seeker, then the other things seem to fall into their place. I am not suggesting that they are not equally important, but something seems to happen to make them work, to make them play their role in this Upanishad. And therefore, whereas what is known as Adhikari Vada is considered essential to all aspects of yoga, it is considered of supreme importance in Upanishad, in the transmission of self-knowledge. Adhikari Vada means the doctrine of the qualification of the seeker. You have this in the Bible too, the famous parable of the sower. The seed falls on rock, it doesn't germinate. If it falls somewhere else and the birds eat up, they don't germinate either. The seed has to fall on fertile soil. Though the seed also is important, it is the fertility of the soil that is of supreme importance. So, even though the master must be enlightened, it is the burden of the seeker to equip himself with the qualifications necessary, so vitally necessary, in order to be able to communicate with this master. And so we take that up first. What is the most fundamental qualification in a seeker? There is a word, Shraddha. Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana, Yoga, Yoga, Davaihi. Know that through Shraddha. Bhakti means devotion and Dhyana. This word Shraddha is extremely difficult to translate. It has been translated into the single word faith. And then expanded into faith in God, faith in your Guru, faith in yourself, faith in the scriptures. But what does the word faith mean? Even the word faith. Even the word faith is not always clearly understood. We often confuse the word faith with the other word belief. Belief is total nonsense. You can believe in anything. Knowing that you can throw one belief and pick up another. You keep on playing with ping pong with beliefs. Why is it so? Because the very center and core of belief is a lie, is falsehood. B-E-L-I-E-F. You cannot write the word belief without writing the word lie. You must lie in order to believe. Belief is of absolutely no value except to the extent that it may be initially necessary in order to inspire you to leave, go along and find out. Faith is that momentum which helps you move in order to find it. Belief is what might trigger you, give you the first push perhaps, or tempt you to investigate. But faith is what keeps you going faster and faster and faster towards the truth, towards what you want to know, what you want to realize, what you want to experience. That's not all. What keeps you going? You take a few steps, you are still haunted by this belief. Unless there is some early intimation of what is coming, of what you are likely to realize, you won't proceed further. You will take a few steps, you will go a mile, and if you find some light is burning, enlightenment. And if you find that you are getting nowhere, then you will stop, you will retrace your step, or you will go astray somewhere else. So, faith implies a certain understanding, a certain knowledge, a certain intuitive feeling that you are on the right track. When you have this intuitive feeling that you are on the right track, then there is tremendous enthusiasm, and so enthusiasm is part of the Shraddha. Inspiration is part of the Shraddha, faith. Energy is part of the Shraddha, faith. Concentration is part of the Shraddha, faith. And a total dedication is part of the Shraddha, faith. If you have these, then you have success in the palm of your hands. Nothing daunts you, nothing pulls you back, nothing tempts you to turn back. You are set, the goal is set, and you are going. You cannot have that enthusiasm, that energy, that zeal, that spirit of dedication if you do not have some experience of the reality at almost each step. Only when that is there can it graduate into Shraddha or faith. Otherwise it is merely belief, it is nothing. It has no power, no strength. Most of us who take up yoga, meditation, and sadhana, spirituality, religious life for 6 months, we are nothing. It's very foolish, immature. Attempt undertaken out of, I don't know, curiosity perhaps. Let's see what's there. Faith has a tremendous energy. Though the word faith usually doesn't suggest that. Shraddha suggests that. There's tremendous energy, enthusiasm, and a spirit of dedication. And seriousness. Shraddha, bhakti, dhyana, yoga, davaihi. The truth is extremely simple, but you must have the this seriousness, this dedication, this shraddha, faith. There is one story which illustrates, two or three, I will give you one by one, which illustrates this in the Upanishads. Once it is said that Brahma, the creator of the world, was giving a sermon. Who were the audience? All his children. Who were his children in those days? Gods and demons. This happened in heaven, so human beings were not there. Gods and demons were both there, listening to his sermon. As a matter of fact, I think demons had not become demons till a few minutes later. All of them were there. And the creator had said, Yesha Atma Apahatabhatma, this Atman who is beyond all sin, Vijaro Vimruttihu, doesn't grow old, doesn't die, doesn't suffer from hunger and thirst. He who knows this gains all the world, becomes the emperor of all the worlds. All of them heard this sermon and they walked out. And suddenly they formed into two groups. One group was headed by the person known as Indra, and the other group was headed by the person known as Virochana. There was a caucus meeting here and the caucus meeting there. They said, hey, he said, if you know the Atma, you become the Lord of the three, Lord of the whole world. We want to be the Lord of the whole world, our party. And so why don't you, our leader, go and find out what this Atman is. So Indra came through one door, Virochana came through the other door. Both of them sought the presence of the master and asked the same question, sir, what is it? What is the Atma you are talking about? The self you are talking about. Atman means self. You are talking about. What is the master's answer? Come on, sit down, I will tell you. For a cup of coffee. No. Just go into the kitchen and serve your guru for the next 32 years. Then I will tell you. Are you serious? Or are you asking this question out of curiosity? If you are serious, go into the kitchen and wash dishes for the next 32 years. Then I will tell you. The creator is immortal, so you are not afraid that you might die in the meantime. Go into the kitchen, wash the dishes, go into the garden, do some gardening, farming, and then come back to me after 32 years, I will teach you. Why is it so? Teaching is very easy, but responding to the teaching is extremely difficult. there is always this tremendous inner resistance. Those of you, I don't know if but many have done so, I think. If you have lived with the master, a living enlightened man like Swami Shivananda was, then you will realize this. Even though you think he is your master, and when everything is bright and delightful, you swear to yourself, I can do anything for him. When he does ask you to do something which is not so convenient to you, there is an inner resistance. Something it says, why does he say so? Why does he tell me to do this? Something, some inner, what I call a grating. You can almost hear some grating going on within your own heart. You don't want to do it. You may eventually do it, but with all this grating. That is a block, a mental block, a psychological block. As long as that is there, no instruction, no communication can ever take place. It's a waste of time. And no Upanishad can happen. You are not serious. There is some block in you. You do not have Shraddha, you do not have faith. If you have faith in the master, you will do anything that he says, that he asks you to do. And so, they insisted upon the service of the teacher, 32 years. And after the 32 years, the battle was not over. Both of them came in. Yes. Now, we asked a question 32 years ago, and can we have an answer? When you look at each other, what do you see in the eyes of the other person? That which you see in those eyes, what do you see in the eyes of the other person? Oh, I see myself. That's it. I see. But as a matter of fact, they said, we can see better in the mirror than in the eyes. Which one is it? Well, look into the mirror, what do you see? I see myself, that's it. That is the self. If you want, you can have a basin of oil and look into it. What do you see? You see yourself, that's it. That is the self. And both Indra and Virochana looked into the mirror, into the basin of oil. That's all. This body is the self. Hey, that's great. Let's go. Which meant eat, drink and be merry, fight and jump on each other, and the survival of the fittest, you will certainly conquer the whole world. They both went away. And the old man, Brahma, he looked at them in the pity, oh my God. It's a sad day when people would take what is being said without proper investigation. Fantastic. Here is, we are told, the Creator Himself, who had directly instructed two of His chosen sons and disciples. And when they go away, He shakes His head and says, why do they accept what is being said without proper investigation? Only one man went away, and he started the demoniacal cult of body worship. This is, I spoke to my father and master, Brahma, the creator, and he told me that your body is God. Your body is the self. And you worship it, you keep it in good shape, you eat the right food, right kind of food, plenty of vitamins, organic food, balanced diet, and exercise yourself, run, swim, play tennis, and then fight. You will win, you will succeed, you will become the lord of the world. And that is the cult of the demons. That is when the demons were actually organized. This other fellow, Indra, he was also going back to his camp, but on the way he thought, no, I have not understood it correctly. Because if the body is the self, then he also said that you will be free from old age, you will be free from death, and you will be free from pain, sorrow, suffering and all that. There is something wrong. So he came back. He came back and asked the same question. What is it? I don't see. I see that there is some defect in my understanding of your teaching. Aha. You want clarification? 32 years more. Like that, he lived for 101 years in the house of the master, serving him, before the final communication could take place. That showed seriousness. That showed earnestness. That showed sincerity. That showed faith. How many of us would spend not 101 years, even 30 years under a master, serving him unquestioningly? If we did not have some inner experience that through this person's instruction, through this exercise, I can get at this truth. That is faith. And then you don't give up. You go on and on and on and on till the truth is realized. Siddha Bhakti Dhyana Yoga Ravaihi. Then the Upanishad goes on to say, Nakarmanana Prajayadhanena Thyageneke Amrutattvamanashu. Not by doing many things, not by struggling hard, not by indulging in all sorts of effort, endeavor, activity, can you attain this enlightenment. But by total renunciation. Not even by wealth, by total renunciation. And Shraddha also means this renunciation. Shraddha, or what you call faith, also implies and demands renunciation. When you pursue what you have faith in, you are prepared to abandon all that stands as an obstacle to it.
on the path, anything. There is another story. The story of Maitreyi. Now we come to a woman saint, woman sage. A male sage, Yajnavalkya, had two wives.
The sages were not sannyasis, swamis. They were household, retired householders, recluses. And so they had their wives with them. And this man was giant intellect. Probably we'll come back to him sometime later during these discussions. Yajnavalkya is a very famous name in Upanishads. And one day he called both his wives and said to them, "Now I want to become a mendicant, religious mendicant, a sannyasi. I want to abandon this home life and take the homeless life. I have plenty of wealth and I will divide it equally between you two. Thank you and bye bye." He was fabulously wealthy, I believe. That also we'll discuss on a later session. The one woman kept quiet. "All right, if that is what you feel fit to do, that's your problem." The other wife, Maitreyi, she responded with a question. "You say you will give me a lot of wealth. That's very kind of you, very considerate of you. But I have heard you discourse upon self-knowledge, Atma-jnana, immortality, eternal life. And now you say you will give me a lot of wealth. Can you also indicate where I can buy that immortality with this wealth that you are giving me?" He said, "Oh, amurtatvasyatuna shasti vittena. I never said that one can buy immortality with wealth." "Aha," she said, "then keep the wealth yourself or give it to her. I would like immortality, not your wealth." And then suddenly the Upanishad becomes a second honeymoon. He falls in love with her all over again. And says, "Oh, you are very dear to me." He is going to leave her in half an hour. He is going to abandon her and leave her and go away in half an hour. But still he says, "You are very dear to me now. Come on, sit down, I will tell you." Then Upanishad happens. Here is a woman who is going to be divorced, whose husband is going to leave her and go away incognito. And he says, "I have got plenty of money, I will give you some and I will give her some." But this woman says, "I don't want this wealth. I would like to learn more about immortality." What is that? That spirit of renunciation is needed. And again, unless you have this faith that here I can get this, with this wealth I cannot get this. I am totally dedicated to this, not to the acquisition of wealth. If that total dedication, spirit of dedication is not there, then there is no faith. You are not a seeker. You are not seeking something. You are not seeking what you are supposed to be seeking. In the same way, we have another beautiful story, the story of Nachiketa. We'll have more detailed examination of this Nachiketa story as in the weeks to come. But today we are interested only in the qualifications of the spiritual seeker. I'll tell you the story in detail later, on another occasion. A young boy faces death. A young boy faces death. And it is said that he was aware of death, and that death was personified in his mental vision, or in his spiritual vision, or actually, I don't know. He saw death, and for some reason, which we shall also discuss later, this death granted him three boons. He chose two boons, some ordinary boons which are not very of great importance to us now, and having granted those two boons, the god of death asked this young boy, come on now, choose the third boon. Yeyam prete vichikitsa manushye asti ityeke nayam asti ityeke. I have a doubt, I have a question. Some people say that upon leaving this world, the person ceases to exist. And some people say he exists. Please tell me what is the truth. The fellow chose the right person to ask the question. Only the god of death would know. Nobody else. We are all guessing. You ask me what happens after death, and I ask her what happens after death. All three of us go to a priest and go and ask him what happens after death. We are all asking the barking of the wrong tree. If you ask me what happens after death, I will tell you, wait, I will tell you after a few more years. If I come back, or if you see me again, I will tell you what happens after death. But asking me now is waste of time, we are guessing. So, this young boy, when he was standing face to face with death, he had the golden opportunity that if anyone should know, he should know. He is death, and he knows what happens on the other side. And this god of death, Yama, was not very keen to divulge the secret before examining the student if he was qualified to receive this knowledge. So, in a manner of speaking, he says, ah, forget it, man. I'll give you a nice bar of chocolate. But why do you want to know about death and all this? What happens afterwards? Why don't you enjoy yourself? I'll give you lots and lots of girlfriends, celestials. I'll give you first-class cars, sports cars, anything you want, great wealth, enjoy yourself. What do you want to know about death and after death state? This young boy, totally undeflected by these temptations, he says, oh, you want to give me all this? All these pleasures? all these objects of pleasure, I don't want you. Sorry, you keep them. You can keep them. Sarvendriyanam jarayanti tejaha. You can place an enormous chocolate cake or cheesecake in front of somebody, but who is going to eat it? He or you? He. And who is going to suffer from indigestion? He or you? He. So there is no big deal offering all these lovely things to another person. Hospitality often leads to hospital. Is that what you want to do? You want to offer me these things? I am going to enjoy. And my energy is going to be depleted, not yours. So, tavai vavaha, tavan nritya gite, let all these be belong to you, I don't want. I want only what I asked for. Tell me the truth. What happens after I abandon the body here? Do I still exist or do I not exist? That is Siddha. That is faith. Tremendous faith. This I want, nothing else. And straight you go. With an utter spirit of dedication, keenness, earnestness, seriousness, enthusiasm, energy. In search of truth. In search of truth, one has to be extremely truthful. Truthful not in the sense of merely speaking the truth. One doesn't even understand what this speaking the truth actually means. Just in passing, so that I may not omit to mention this. Speaking the truth is a very delicate affair. Does not mean that we should speak utter falsehood, though in some moral codes, I wouldn't call them even scriptures, very much like ethical codes, it is said that on a few occasions you can tell a lie and the lie becomes truth. They have given a list. Then your parents' reputation is at stake, when your guru's reputation is at stake, or life is at stake, etc., etc., a few other considerations. Or somebody's life is at stake, you can tell a lie, that is counted as truth. We don't want to enter into all that. But there is a very simple and beautiful definition of truth in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is also repeated in some of the moral texts. The definition is satyam priya hitam. Truth, in order to be truthful, must also satisfy the two other criteria, that it must be pleasant and beneficial. So if something does not satisfy these three criteria, truthful, pleasant and beneficial, keep quiet. This is as far as speaking the truth is concerned. But devotion to truth does not merely mean speaking the truth at all times. does not merely mean speaking the truth at all times, but investigating the truth. Even in the case of speaking the truth, one has to be cautious. Is this truth, or do I consider it, or do I think it is true? You find a yogi sitting on the beach and drinking. You look at it, unmistakably, it is a bottle of wine. Oh my God! And you are horrified and you go away and tell some others, I saw that great yogi sitting on the beach and drinking a bottle of wine, straight, neat. Maybe the bottle was wine bottle and what was in it was water. How do you know? Have you investigated it? Did you find out the truth about it? Or did you merely look and you made up your own mind what he was doing and very seriously thought that you are telling the truth? And so there is a beautiful saying in Tamil, Kannal kandadum poi kadal kertadum poi teera vijarit tarivadeemai. What you see is false, what you hear is false. Only that is true which you have discovered after thorough investigation. This is another aspect of this truth. But now we are concerned with the discovery of truth, which involves all this constant investigation of what is truth. There is a rather interesting story in one of the Upanishads. There was a servant maid who used to work for a number of Brahmins in the area, in the village. And she had a son. The son's, I don't know whether we even know the son's name. He is called Satyakama, I believe. And the mother's name was Jabala. One day, he asked his mother, I want to go and learn from a master in the village, but he is sure to ask me about my parentage. You never told me who my father is. She said to the son, my son, I have been serving quite a number of these Brahmins here, and I don't know of whom you were born. Honest. Right. Thank you very much. And I called you Satyakama. My name is Jabala, so you can say I am Jabala Satyakama. Satyakama, Jabala's son. He went to the master, and the master said, all right, you want to be my student? Who is your father? And the young boy boldly said, sir, I don't know who the father is. My mother is Jabala and I am Satyakama. Hey, the master was tremendously impressed. He said, you are bold enough to speak the truth. You must be a Brahmin, he said. You must be a Brahmin. That's why you are bold enough to say it. Come on, sit down, I'll teach you. That story is also interesting. I'll tell that in brief. Then, come on, I'll teach you. But he didn't teach. He gave me a few cows and a bull and told him, go take it for grazing. Take this lot for grazing. And when they multiply into 1,000, come back to me, I'll teach you. We don't know how long it took. A few years, obviously. And when they multiplied into 1,000, the bull came to him and said, we are 1,000 now, we can go home. And on the way, I will teach you something. Then the bull taught him, fire taught him, the swan taught him, something else taught him. That is, his heart had been so thoroughly purified by the investigation of this truth that he was ready to receive enlightenment or spiritual communication from all sources. So, it is not so much the master that matters. The master can be found everywhere. The bull could be a master. Fire could be a master. Swan could be a master. If my heart is pure, I can learn from all. If I am humble, I can learn from all. If I am totally dedicated, I can learn from all. If I am utterly serious, I can learn from all. If I have firm faith, I can learn from everything. This boy came back with his herd, and even from a distance, the master noticed some radiance on his face. Hey, Satyagama, you look like an enlightened person. Who taught you? And he said, sir, beings other than human, not even a human being other than human, taught me. But please, you also teach me. Then the master also taught him something. To complete his instruction. The vital point here is Shraddha. And the Shraddha includes everything. What is called faith includes everything. All discipline. And Shraddha goes hand in hand with an unceasing quest of truth. This unceasing quest of truth discriminates between what is an opinion and what is truth. What is scriptural knowledge and what is direct experience. Neither rejecting one nor rejecting the other. But knowing that this I have heard, but I have not experienced. This I have experienced. This I have experienced, but not investigated. When I investigate this, I find various facets in that also. In this manner, one goes on investigating, the truth, totally dedicated to its discovery. That is what constitutes the seeker.